This week's episode of So Wrong It's Right was brought to you by Foxy Bingo. Put some Fox in your day with new, quick and interactive bingo experiences all at the tip of your finger. They have a huge range of free, classic and exclusive games you can play with your mates to keep the party going. Want to connect with other players? Foxy Bingo has a community chat so you can always feel part of the Foxy pack. So get your Fox on by heading to Foxy Bingo today. 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply. At current standing, who's your favourite child?
I mean, you're wearing an Hermes scarf I got you. I put you into early menopause.
Yeah, for sure. I think there was definitely a connection there with the stress of you at that time. Oh, you're so uncool. You're such a loser as a mother. I'm not your best friend. I'm your mother.
Oh, so you weren't even my friend, mate.
No, there you go.
You weren't even my associate.
Because no, Dad and I always, I know people always think their children are special, but we always thought that you, you know, we just thought you were so bright and you got the looks.
But we'll go for the lower facelift together when I'm 40 and you'll be...
God knows how old, yeah.
90?
Look who this is. It's Olivia Atwood's mother.
Jennifer Atwood, welcome to So Wrong It's Right, hosted by me, your daughter, Olivia Atwood.
Hi.
I'm nervous. I'm not going to lie. You were a highly requested guest.
Right.
Hate to admit that.
Don't know why, but...
But here you are. What do you think of my set?
It's cool. I like it.
Any notes?
No, I think it's all good.
What about the pineapple?
Yeah, that's good. Doesn't it represent money? Good fortune, pineapple. Golden pineapple. I think
she's,
it does.
If you're watching this in the car, she's squinting, so I'm not sure. And by the little paw, that's for the noosies.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Let's go back to the creation of you. Let's set the scene. It's the 1800s.
Yeah, I knew this was going to happen.
Okay, go on. Because people, middle child of seven.
I was the fourth daughter, so you can imagine how delighted my parents were when I was born. Three boys followed after that. Fantastic mother, worked full time, was a community midwife, delivered babies. You know, we were brought up to do things for ourselves from a very early age. There were lists of chores on the fridge and on the kitchen walls that we had to do each week if we wanted our pocket money. Some mornings, if my mother was called out to deliver a baby, we'd wake up and she wouldn't be there, and we knew exactly what we had to do. The clothing was on the radiator, get dressed, go to school, that's the bus, be there on time. Yeah, that's the way it was. Quite structured, like a little mini army.
You're a bit like the Von Trapp kids.
We were really, yeah.
Did you always know you wanted to move to London? Was that kind of like something you knew from a young age?
Yeah, I didn't particularly want to stay in the Midlands for some reason. I don't know. There's nothing wrong with the Midlands, but...
You had your sights set on the bright lights. Kai Atwood, when does he enter the scene? How did you meet?
I was playing squash with... I don't think he was a boyfriend, just somebody I was playing squash with. And he...
Squash,
I was playing squash, yes. And he popped his head over and said, would you like a game? And I said, well, I'm really sorry.
Oh, my God, that is so cringe.
I know, it's so cringe. I'm really sorry, but I've already got a partner. Yeah, right. So I never saw him again. And then a girlfriend of mine said, oh, I know this really nice guy. We should get a foursome together. She was going out with an American guy at the time.
Awesome. Sorry.
And the idea was the four of us were going to go out to dinner.
Okay.
And on the night, she turned up and she said, I'm really sorry, Mark and I can't come. And I said, come on, Linda. She said, no, really. I said, no, I'm not going. She said, no, you have to go. He's really nice. The last person I introduced together, they're now married with four kids. And I said, well, I'm definitely not going. But anyway, I did. It was an interesting date. I'd learned very quickly that he was very interested in cars, and he'd been into Formula Ford and doing stuff like that. But what threw me was that he drove the car with straight arms like a racing driver, and I didn't know anything about racing driving. I just thought he was a bit weird.
What a bit of an ick.
I just thought, what is he doing? Why is he driving with straight arms?
My dad's North American, so he speaks with a North American accent.
Yeah, Canadian.
What did you make of that, Canadian?
Oh, I thought it was quite cute, yeah.
You liked it?
Yeah, I mean, I liked him immediately, really, because he's just somebody that has a lot of enthusiasm and is very excited about everything he's talking about. And
he's quite passionate about things that he likes.
And very nice manners, very nice manners.
My dad does have very good
gentleman. High on my list with men.
Yeah.
Yeah, always has been, yeah.
So then we fast forward, we'll skip the graphic details. You get married and I arrive.
Yes, 10 days late, not wanting to be born at all.
10 days late from the Fijian.
Yes, unfortunately.
Taking out everything with me as I left.
Probably.
I've been tortured by the story of this birth my whole life.
You don't know the details and I'd never tell you.
Why?
Because it was the birth, everything went wrong that could have gone wrong, basically.
Oh, Jesus.
And so you were born and you, although you were a very pretty baby, you were black and blue, basically.
And yellow.
And yellow.
Next thing that is probably noteworthy happens, Georgia comes along.
Yeah.
But in very close proximity. I mean, yes. It was like, we are, how close are we in age? We had this debate on the pod when she was
20
on.
20 months.
20, it's close.
Yeah, very, yeah.
We lived in London, we were in Kew, and we were living there, and then my dad gets transferred to Canada. What was it like moving across the world with two small children to
a place that you
didn't know anyone?
Yeah, it was difficult. I have to say, the Canadian people, the women in general, they are amazing people. I mean, they were very welcoming. I made friends. I joined a health club. You know, you guys went to Montessori. We did things with other parents there. It was cool. They were... I couldn't have asked for anything better, really.
Did you miss the UK?
I think only missing family, missing my mother, I think, because she'd been a big part of our lives up until then. And I think you kept asking, where's Nana, where's Nana? And it was tricky to explain that, you know. But she did visit us.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did come out for a couple of weeks at a time, a few times. But Kai was happy that his job was going well. And, of course, Kai loves Canada, obviously, anything to do with snow and... cold weather. Well, he's just in there, isn't he?
Yeah. My dad is a big Canada fan, isn't he? Yeah. My dad is obviously Canadian, and me and my siblings are half Canadian, but my dad is, sometimes you think he's on the tourism board the way he talks about it. Then the end of his contract appears. We go back to England.
You went into a little prep school. Well, we made a mistake, first of all. You went into a school, we won't mention any names, that was so, we didn't realise how strict it was. And basically we pulled you out after buying all this expensive uniform. We pulled you out after about a month because it was just so polar opposite to what you'd experienced in Canada.
So I'm at school in the UK.
Yeah.
I think that's where we spoke about this not long ago. I feel like that's where, not where things started to go wrong, but I think looking back, like hindsight's always like really interesting, isn't it? And people always ask me like, were you naughty at school? And what I always say is like at that age, in what was that be primary school, I was getting in trouble a lot for things like daydreaming, talking.
Not concentrating.
But I think obviously this is where the ADHD was obviously displaying itself. But we didn't know that. We didn't know that I had ADHD.
I think at the time people would describe you as overactive.
Yeah.
Not hyperactive because you weren't destructive. You weren't like racing around in circles, but you were definitely overactive. Things that made it worse, it was certainly diet had played a part. So it was additives and things and colours.
The E-numbers that are now banned in.
Yeah.
But that you is typical with someone with attention deficit disorder. They react to them. What would happen is they'd shout and then I'd like burst into tears or they'd go, why have you done that? And I'd go, I don't know. Like, I had done something stupid or impulsive, you know, and they'd ask me why I'd done it and I wouldn't be able to answer them because I didn't actually know why whatever I'd done or I didn't mean to, I don't know. So it kind of made me nervous and I became quite, that's where I think to me, like anxiety started. And I became very fearful of like teachers and going to school and stuff, which again, I think would surprise people, you know, how I am now. And I used to get, especially the first day of anything was a nightmare for me. So first day of term or if I'd had a few days off being sick, going back was just, I'd just be sobbing. I couldn't bear it. And you always used to say to me, you know, like, what are you so worried about? Nothing can happen that you're not going to shoot you. Like, you haven't done your homework. Like, what can they do? Like, nothing can be this bad to be this upset. But I had a really hard time, like, rationalizing, you know, that. It's strange. It's like I used to make it so much bigger. And that anxiety kind of used to, like, build up in me, you know, through the day or through a week. And I was just very nervous, the complete opposite to how my sister was. And then my brother came along, like 10 years between us. And again, he was very different.
Yeah, I just think you found it very difficult to sit down. You found it very difficult to get on with your schoolwork, which annoyed these high achieving teachers who just were looking at the end result, the grades you were going to get and put their school in a good light. And because you didn't fit into what they wanted you to do,
it annoyed them, and they, you know, not that they did much to help you rectify that problem, but yeah, you did struggle getting the work down on paper. That was your biggest problem. Because when you had your Ed Psych reports done, it was a bit of a very complicated profile that you had, because you had a high IQ, but then the dyslexia was pulling that down. So
I think we, like, you know, I've spoke about this on my Instagram, and it's something that a lot of people write to me. I think if we went back 30 years and I was in school now, someone would probably say she looks like she's got an attention deficit of some degree. Whereas very much when I was at school, and a lot of women I know that I speak to on social media about this, who are similar age to me, they didn't believe that that was really a thing. It wasn't a thing that that girls got diagnosed with. It wasn't really...
No.
The word was floated around, but it wasn't... No one ever... They were like, oh, it kind of could be, but we don't really see it in girls. Because basically, ultimately, it displays itself completely different in women to it does in men. And then I think around the first time I remember having my first panic attack, you know, when you were called to the school, it used to come because, for example, like you said, it would be like an exam or something where I knew that I was going to have to sit somewhere for, say, 2 hours, 3 hours. And... Well, at the time, obviously, I didn't understand this. You didn't understand this. This, like, rising fear would, like, come over me. And I didn't know that that's what I was so nervous about. But ultimately, it was because I was thinking, I can't sit there for that. Well, they shut the door and the timer goes on. The first time it happened, I'd gotten myself in such a state. I was in blind panic, wasn't I? I was taken out of the classroom, sobbing, sweating, like completely disassociating, everything that's, again, associated with anxiety. But even at that time, weirdly, I think my reaction was so extreme. It was such a pent-up thing where it all came out. That, you know, it was kind of like, get us the GP, you know, is she got epilepsy? Is she got this? All the things, no one went, oh, that's a panic attack. Because again, I think it was something that people was really hadn't got so much of a handle on
yet. Also, they didn't associate young adolescents with having panic attacks.
And also it was like, at that time, it was like, well, what's going on at home? Parents are together, happy home, you know, got food on the table. What, like you say, you didn't associate that with a child that had no obvious reason to be anxious. And then basically, I think through secondary school, I had a hard relationship with myself because I constantly felt kind of frustrated at myself. And anyone who has anxiety or had panic attacks, when you've had one, you do live... When it's been really bad, you kind of live in fear of the next one, and you started to pick up these sort of strange cues where, I don't know, that classroom set it off, so I don't want to go in that classroom again. And you kind of start to like blacklist things. It makes life really fucking difficult. And I think you remember, I mean, I became a bit of a nightmare for you guys because I started then doing all this stuff where I kind of would be like, oh, I'm afraid of lifts, or I'm afraid of raw chicken. And basically I kind of wrote this like list to myself, didn't I, of things that like... I was afraid of, and I just kept adding to the list.
And I also think for, as parents, we were actually quite worried at one point, I think about the age of about 14, that you were going to leave school without any education at all because you just would not sit down and do the work. You know, I remember watching you through a crack in your bedroom door one night, and you were supposed to be doing your homework, and you literally got up.
Creepy at all.
And you literally got up and walked around the table about six times and sat down. Then you got up and looked out the window, and then you'd walk around the table the other way. But there was nothing on. There was nothing done.
No. Yeah. Even now, as I say, my step count a day is like 18,000 steps. That's like a regular day, which just, I mean, I'm fast forwarding a bit there, but it, you know, I know everyone wanted me to talk with you about my teen years, and that's kind of what I'm like warming up to, because I think being such an anxious kid and then feeling like I was very out of control of my sort of behaviour, when you look back, that is why getting into like the party scene and becoming like a wild child.
You were definitely, that's when our biggest worry started, apart from the lack of academic work, was then you changed schools, you went to a day boarding school.
She didn't want me boarding after a while because like basically she was like, when Olivia stays over, it's lawless. But when she's not here,
you mean your house mistress?
Yeah, yes. She's like, when she's not here, everyone goes to bed. And when she is here.
But then, of course, at the weekends, it was this, oh, there's a gathering. This word gathering used to literally send shivers down our spines. And we'd say, okay, we want to know where it is. We're going to take you. We'll bring you back. And you
get dropped off by you.
And
cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I used to get it all the time from you. Was, oh, you're so uncool. You're such a loser as a mother. You know, the other girls don't have their parents picking them up, and they don't need to know what the address is. And my answer to you was, I'm not your best friend, I'm your mother.
Oh, so you weren't even my friend, mate.
No, there you go.
You weren't even my associate.
No, not even my associate. So well, you did go to a lot of parties, a lot of gatherings, and some of them ended badly, as we know.
Do you want to share any?
Well, I bring it back to this, you know, this whole, and I don't know what other areas are like, but I think you've got overprivileged parents who want to be cool, and there were lots of those in Surrey. They'd throw big house parties and they'd give unlimited alcohol to kids 14, 15, 16, who didn't know how much to drink, how to look after themselves. And I remember being called to one house party and it was like other side of Farnham. Fortunately, Nana was staying so she could stay with the other two kids, and Kai and I set off looking for this house. And when we turned up, your best friend, can't remember her name.
Don't name check people.
No,
fucking hell.
No, had passed out. I mean,
is this the one where someone has shit themselves?
I don't. Well, she was in a bad way. She was in a really bad way. And she.
Because everyone used to say it was me, and it wasn't me.
But literally, you turned up at this really big country house, and there were, I mean, boys not even in puberty staggering around drunk, and I was just totally disgusted.
Or I used to do the one where Wade did come home, and I remember when I bought, was it my birthday, and I brought like four of my friends back, and we'd been to dinner / in the park drinking, and they were all sick in my room, all four of them. And her and my dad were like, make it stop, make it stop. They're all just projectile vomiting. You've got like a bucket and like a mop. And they're all just, literally my whole room, there wasn't a single wall that wasn't like splattered. Listen, I'm not making excuses. Like, I was wild, but I know that this is for a lot of neurodiverse people, right? This just sounds like a cop-out, but I'm just going to say it. The reason I think at that time, and I've had an interesting relationship with alcohol over the years that's kind of developed. As I say, first started getting into that sort of like scene when I was like 14, 15. If you're an anxious kid, right, all you do your whole life is think like, I'm going to die in my sleep. I'm going to have a panic attack. I'm going to get stuck in a lift.
Yeah.
Then you try alcohol for the first time and you're like, oh my God, like it's literally and that's why it's so dangerous.
It's anesthetic, isn't it?
It's all the voices and even still now, and that's why I limit my alcohol content. Everything just goes quiet.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, this way, it feels like not to like care, which is such a dangerous, and it's the reason most people like to drink. But when you are that kind of person, it becomes, obviously that feeling is like, shit, this is fucking amazing. Mm. Like, I had the most insane thoughts and phobias when I was a kid. And then, I could become this other person. It wasn't like, I was funny at school. I was like the class clown. I always had friends. But it was like that, a lot of what I did in secondary school when I became more confident was like, I was like acting. So it's like, as soon as I had alcohol. Mm. But yeah, I obviously haven't had kids yet. And me and my best friend Charlotte. So if those of you in the audience.
Well, Charlotte was a big character in your teenage years.
Well, she always been my whole life. Yeah. But we always talk about like, I think I'm going to have daughters because a psychic told me, but I'm like, me and her were like, how are we not dead? Like how, like the lengths we'd go to cover up where we were going, like you wouldn't be able to find us if it was like, it was insane. The situations we put ourselves into, I'm like, I really just, if I either have a daughter that's, not a fucking nightmare. I was literally like Effie from Skins. It was just a nightmare, and I was thin and I was reckless and I used to go missing, and I just think, I just don't know if I could deal with it. Because at that time, right, you've got me and my sister. My sister, right, I can't even say what I'm going to say about my sister. She wasn't a problem like that. She was popular and she was always partying, but she wasn't a party girl.
No.
And then my brother was a baby. So you were like literally torn between these, like a toddler and...
And I went into the menopause about 2 years after Max was born.
Which
very,
she blames
very
me
abruptly,
for.
Which, because of the stress, I reckon. Yeah.
I put you into early menopause.
Yeah, for sure. I think there was definitely a connection there with the stress of you at that time. And Georgia was, she wasn't doing the stuff you were doing, but she was a full-on character. And it was tricky keeping on top of you because... the menopause for me, I just remember this crushing fatigue. I mean, literally, it was like felt like I was walking in sand every day. Like,
how quickly did you notice the menopause? How quickly did it take?
It was quite obvious.
Was it?
Yeah, quite obvious. Yeah, all the physical signs.
Because again, literally, that's one of those things that you hear a lot. Yeah. Lisa Snowden's amazing. She talks about the menopause and she's done loads of like sort of work around it. But again, back then, it wasn't something that people talked about. It's very hush-hush.
Really.
Hush,
no,
like, it was almost like a dirty word, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's for sure.
So then I'm out of school, didn't go on to further education. Well, that's a lie. I went to college for like 2 weeks and they basically didn't want me.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be there either. So I just basically started working, didn't I? I worked at Tony and Guy. I worked at Champneys. I worked in a shop. I just was bobbing around.
Yeah.
But this is where like things got quite interesting for me. And this is something I always want to speak to my audience about. That time when I didn't go on to further education, and this is where I started to really feel like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I just basically would throw everything into relationships. So my life became about, I'd say about boys from quite a young age, but especially at that time, I kind of made whoever my boyfriend was at the time, that was like the most important thing. And then I just kind of went along like that for a few years. And then what I did was, still battling like anxiety and ADHD and all the rest of it. And I had this long list of things that I was afraid of. And I was like, went from one kind of obsessive compulsive relationship to another. And I'd be like, I'm afraid of this. I don't like that. I don't like doing this on my own. Do you know what I mean? My basically made my world like tiny. The first thing that started to be like a change for me, and that kind of I always credit it to like saving me, which is just so crazy to say out loud, was being a monster girl.
But don't you think it was also getting the right help?
So it happened in this order, if you remember. So I became the monster girl and I started realising then that I was like, I was struggling in the beginning with the travel and like, because I'd made everything so small. I'd become codependent on whatever boyfriend I was with.
Yeah.
And then I can't remember which breakup triggered like a bad episode, but something, it was a breakup. And I remember I went to Germany with Dad and I was there and I felt like, physically, like in my bones, like it was like I had I don't know, it's like I had a virus, but I wasn't actually ill. It's like I felt like I was tired, I was cold, I couldn't get out of bed. It's like my body was shutting down.
I remember him telling me about that. He was quite worried.
I couldn't even pretend to be normal.
No.
And then I don't know what the skips and the jumps were, but I got somehow in front of, I'm happy to name her, but Dr. Feeney, who was from the Priory Group, who is a psychiatrist with a specialism in ADHD, especially in adolescent women. But that actually wasn't why I went to her. I went to her because I thought I was depressed. And I explained how I was feeling. And we had a big, long consultation. I was with her about 2.5 hours. And at the end, she says to me, Olivia, have you ever been... anyone ever diagnosed you with ADHD? And I said, and when she said it, I remember thinking, I have heard that word when I was a kid, like, you know, mentioned, but like it had never been kind of stuck on me. And I said that to her. I said, and she said, well, that's the first thing I'm going to say. She's like, you are a 100 textbook. She's like, I'm going to do the assessment now, but I don't even need to. Because she's like, the way you talk, the way you move, the way I've watched you interact with me. And then basically she was like, you've lived with undiagnosed ADHD, which basically has made you, resentful of yourself because you're masking, you're doing things to cope, you're like obsessively compulsively organizing, you're trying to combat all the symbols, you're trying to control impulse behavior and all that stuff, but you can't. And now your body has just gone, I've had enough, and you now are depressed and anxious, but it's like a chicken and egg situation. You're not actually a depressed person. It's like your body has gone, I don't know how to cope with this anymore. Like, I'm just going to make you feel sad. That was a really like pivotal moment for me.
Yeah.
And something that people have always asked me as well that I feel like I wanted to answer, but I'm always wary on this question because this has to be something between you and your doctor. For whatever reason, over the years, and I think it's because the work that I was in at that time and because the job I'm in now, I did try different medications, but I never did a specific ADHD medication.
No.
Because she said at that time, she felt like there were other things that we could try. So everyone has to find their own journey, but I wanted to like kind of tip on that because everyone always asks. And I think, you know, what's right for one person wouldn't be right for another. If I was in a corporate job, I worked in an office, I'd have to medicate it.
Yes.
If I was doing a degree, you'd have to, because you wouldn't be able to get through the day otherwise. But the way my life has gone, it wasn't a need, and it's other things have worked. And some days it's harder than others. Like, I'm sure I can make my life a lot easier by medicating it, but I don't. But anyway, I just thought if I didn't address that, people would ask. But anyway, off the back of that diagnosis, spent a bit of time living with you and Dad, came back home, didn't I? Not permanently, but no, I stayed with you for a few weeks.
You did, yeah.
I went on a few dates with Brad. You encouraged me to go on a few dates with Brad. Love Island Series 2, I turned down. I don't know if I even told you I turned down Series 2.
Yeah, I think you did mention it. Yeah.
Again, I turned it down for a boy, which wasn't Brad, but I turned it down. And then Series 3 came around and I mentioned it to you and I said, oh, they've got back in touch again. And you were the one, because people are always very interested in this, you were the one who said to me, you have to do it, right?
Yeah, because I just knew it would be a platform for something else.
Is that what you didn't think I was going to meet the love of my life?
No. No. Not a chance. No. I just thought, no. Because Dad and I know people always think their children are special, but we always thought that we just thought you were so bright and you got the looks. And we just thought, she can't be wasted. So she's got to find something she's really good at. I know there's something out there she's going to be really good at. And we just didn't know what it was. And then when this came up, I just said to Kai, she's got to do this.
What did he say?
I don't think he wasn't convinced because he didn't know
what it was.
And I didn't really, I'd never watched it either, but I just knew that if people saw you and heard you, because you're funny and you're quick. And
they saw me and heard
you. Oh, they saw and heard you. Anyway, but we stayed up all night. Charlotte and I were just on you the whole time. Mm. So you've got to go. Yeah. I remember falling into bed about 6 o'clock in the morning, Charlotte phoning me saying, she's on the flight.
Yeah, she came with me to pack my bag. Yeah,
yeah, something like that.
Because I
think
one thing that I've always hated is change. And I think, you know, through that year from getting my diagnosis, getting out of that bad relationship, doing Monster, traveling the world, I got it. It's really weird because it didn't happen overnight, but it did happen in a very short amount of time where I do feel like I had this genuine, I try and just describe this visually for people, but I had this day where I was like, I used to cry all the time, right? I was always crying. Like I was always upset about something. And, you know, and I had this day where I just kind of like looked in the mirror and I was like, I'm fed up. I'm fed up with you. I'm fed up. Like this can't be, you know, your life. Like, so I started like, it was weird. I started actively, consciously challenging myself. You know, when I was someone like, I'm not going to go and lift, or I'm not going to eat chicken away from home in case I get salmonella, or I'm not going to, you know, I don't know, I'm not going to, I have to sit on the certain seat. I started forcing myself to do all the things that I was like, quote unquote, scared of. And I just basically made that the thing. And the Love Island was, a year of forcing myself out of my comfort zone. Love Island was the final kind of thing where that was a big one, because I was like, don't know, like I really love being a Monster. I had a really good contract with them. I was traveling the world. I knew that they wouldn't want me back if I did the show, because they'd already said, like, the American office said, is that this or that? So it was a gamble. Series 2 had done well, but not like people weren't like mad famous or anything from it. So I was like, what? You know, I was at Stansted Airport. I was crying. I was throwing up in the toilet. I just was so scared, which is, I think, would be very surprising to people. It was, I was scared. And I think when I went in there, I was very confident. I was very outspoken and stuff. So, you know, through those years, I had come out of my shell. And I very much did have the opinion of myself. Like when I was going in, it was quite a conscious thing where I was like, one, I don't think I can self-edit, but I was very much like, I'm not going to self-edit. I said, because I always felt the worst thing on those shows, because I was a fan of reality TV, was the people that go in and no one ever remembers who the fuck they were. So I thought, I'm not going to act, I'm not going to do it up, but I'm also just going to do this exactly how I do if I was with my mates. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to... And so, obviously, I became a controversial character and the show went massive. It was the biggest... I think still to this day, it's one of the most viewed series worldwide ever.
Yeah.
And no one fucking expected it.
No.
What was that like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's different for all family members, wasn't it? I mean, we were down in Somerset and sort of cut off, you know, in the countryside, so... We didn't have to...
Did you have internet?
Well, we did, but no, but I mean, we didn't have to...
Cut off?
No. I don't know. Okay, put it a different way.
They've moved a lot, by the way. Yeah. Don't need the boring story.
I mean, yeah, if you're in a rural, semi-rural environment and if you lived in London, you'd walk into people all the time that might... might talk about it or whatever. I don't know. I'm thinking about now, actually, because people recognise me now, which is actually more of a problem for me than... Because I have people come up to me now and going, oh, you're Olivia Atwood's mum, you know. But believe it or not, back then...
I must be going back quite a few years
now. 2017.
Yeah, I mean, probably within 6 months of you coming outside. I don't know why they knew I was your mother, but they twigged the name.
But you went on the show, Mum. You came on there.
Oh,
you
yeah, of course I did. Oh, of course I did. That's why they knew. Yeah,
and
you
were on Lorraine.
Oh yeah, of course I forgot that.
And you're quite recognisable.
What?
You're quite recognisable.
Well, I suppose so, yeah. I just remember going into my local pharmacy to pick up a prescription and the girl behind the counter looking at the name and going like this. And then she turned behind to all the young pharmacists. There must have been about five of them in this big pharmacy. Look who this is. It's Olivia Atwood's mother. And literally, it was just such a crowded pharmacy and everybody just descended on me and they were going...
And you were just trying to get your chlamydia tablets.
That's right, yeah. No.
On my Instagram, I said that Gemma was coming on. So I said to my followers, you can ask me anything you want. Obviously, there were thousands of questions, literally. So what I did is I've gone through and I've picked up the ones that repeat themselves the most. So like okay. The top, so I can sure. Go through that way. So there's a range in here. Are you ready, bitch? Ready?
Yep.
I have a nightmare teenager. How on earth do you survive?
You need support. You need support from your partner, from your husband or wife, whatever.
She's a single mum.
She's a single mum.
What if she is, I'm saying?
What if she is, then maybe her mother or a sister or a friend. But just try and stay connected is the really main advice I would give, is just try and find some connection. Don't lose connection completely, because if you do, then it's a long road back.
Your thoughts on Chris? Love Island Chris.
Oh, Chris. Ooh, what can I say?
Anything you say too serious might consequently.
I think he's got a lovely family. He's from a lovely family. He's very fortunate to have such a supportive family, because we met all of them, as you know.
I'll go on the record and say that his older brothers are absolute arseholes.
The older brothers.
The younger brothers, really.
The younger
nice.
Brothers, lovely.
They yeah. were horrible to me.
Yeah, the older,
that's a whole other
well, the
episode.
Older brothers thought, you know, they were just trying to manipulate the whole situation, weren't they? But I think Chris, in his own way, has things to offer. But he's probably not...
We could not have been a worse match.
No, and you need somebody calm and kind, and you still do, and he was the opposite of that. So that's why it didn't work.
Skincare tips on how you look so good for your age, because, wow, you're 80? I won't say your age, so I don't actually know how old you are anymore, because you lie so much, but you would be shooketh how old she is. And there's no facelift. So, well, tell them what you used to tell me growing up, because I had the full Clarins or Clinique 4-step ratio kit at probably about 12. So we had skincare 13, yeah. drummed into us.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Skincare,
the usual. Clean your skin, cleanse your face, good moisturisers, stay, you know, sunblock, don't go in the sun in the middle of the day. And if you do, hat, block. And I've never smoked, and I've never really drank alcohol that much. So maybe that's, and to be fair, genes play an important part. My mother looks amazing for her age. So the usual stuff. Yeah. Good diet.
Bit of Botox.
Yeah, a bit of Botox.
Funniest memory together?
Of you?
Me and you together.
Me and you together. Funniest or traumatic?
There's loads. One thing that did bring me and my sister back together in those years, and it still is actually probably like you
not the Dubai thing.
You're going to get annoyed, but my sister and I are like a solid foundation of our relationship is taking the piss out of you, which
definitely.
Obviously
always
gets her really riled up.
Yeah,
but there's loads of stories where we have like ruthlessly taken the piss out of you.
Oh yeah,
but we got called, like, we were laughing on Boxing Day. This is the first Boxing Day we had my family with Brad's family, and we weren't even laughing because she's so paranoid. We weren't even laughing about her. We're in a massive table, 20-seater table, and we're down the other end. Me and my sister just laughed about something, and she goes, "What are you laughing at, you pair of bitches?" In front of Brad's family. You did! Debbie Dack went... And she goes, "Oh, please." I bet she goes on like that to Beth behind closed doors, Brad's sister. And we're like, no, she actually doesn't. But anyway, at the time we actually were taking the piss out of you, my mum went for a stage. I won't for the details, but you kept pissing your pants, didn't you? You did. So basically, the damage that I caused on my birth was long lasting.
That was before I had surgery.
She had
a baby bladder. Yeah.
Yeah. So you would basically.
We went to Dubai on holiday. Is that the way I knew that was going to come out? God.
We went to Dubai on a holiday and we go on it. She's weed before she's left. But again, she's cut. Like, it would come on and you'd be like, I have to wee now. Like, that's how it'd be. Which I'm sure loads of women can relate to.
Yeah.
And then we were on a sand dune. When I say in the middle of the desert, like, you can't see anything for miles, we're in these jeeps. God, really showing our family's privilege here, but whatever. And me and my sister at the time, we had those like little pink, like, you know, the little digital camera, and you were getting really upset. And my dad was going, well, you can't, what are you going to do? And you're like, I have to piss. I'm going to piss myself.
So I went off down the other side of this huge, huge sand dune to have a discreet pee.
In an Arab country, by the way. Big risk, but there was no one for miles.
No.
So me and my sister, we army crawls the top of this hill and we're lying on our chest taking photos, which is kind of sick actually, of my mum with her pants around her ankles.
But then worse happened.
So then she looks up, she sees that we're taking photos of her, panics, tries to pull her pants up and falls down the sand dune. So she's rolling, ball still pissing, with her pants around her ankles, getting caked in sand, while me and my sister were like...
It's true.
And then she comes back up the sand dune, wailing, tattletaling to my dad.
And Kai's literally freaking.
My dad's chasing us round the car, like grabbing hold of us, trying to get these cameras off us.
Give me the camera now.
Give me the fucking picture. There's all while this tour guide is just thinking, what the fuck
is going on?
Is this like what?
I mean, literally, I like a falconry experience as much as the next girl. But they drive you 3 hours into the desert and 3 hours back, and they don't have any toilet facilities.
I mean, I don't think it's that far. But
it was a long time.
But that was a good one.
It was a good one.
Next, at current standing, who's your favourite child?
Oh gosh, I definitely don't have a favourite child. I like. There are things about each of you that I like more than the other, maybe, certain things. But I can't, I don't have a favourite.
Who are you enjoying the most right now? Don't feel pressure because you're here.
Georgia, I really like talking to Georgia. She talks about lots of different things.
A bit like we've just done now.
I feel quite at ease around her because she's usually, her moods are quite stable, I find.
You're really painting me out to semi-erratic.
No. But Matt, because I see a lot of Max, and I find Max really kind and sort of, you can talk to him on the same level.
So Max kind, Georgia interesting to talk to.
And you...
Perfect.
And also,
you're wearing an Hermes scarf I got you, so
yes, the gifts, the Christmas gifts are lovely, thank you. I enjoy being with you, but, you know, yeah.
I don't know if you're telling the truth. It doesn't feel like you are, if I'm honest.
Well, it's just every time I come to your house, you've got these huge dogs that bite my butt.
They don't bite, they like to sniff.
They corn cob, enjoyable.
It's a love thing.
Yeah, they bite all the way up. Nah.
You can't blame... Because you're blaming Lola and Stitch now because they like to smell your rectum.
Oh,
that's actually,
dear
that's
God.
Them being... That's a mating thing. They're just checking you out.
Right, I'm pleased to hear it. Right.
Right, moving on from that because I was fucking aggressively disappointing. What traits of you do you see in me, if any? I mean, clearly... I'm going to hold my breath.
Gosh.
Well, do you think I'm more like my father?
You're both quick-witted and you both have the same habit, which is speaking very quickly, and he still does it. And that's the one thing I noticed about him when I first met him, that he speaks very, very quickly and so do you. As a child, people are always asking you to slow down because your brain's quick and then but you don't have any problem actually speaking quickly as well, whereas some people can't do that, but you do. But sometimes it's too much and what did you say? Can you say that again? You know,
obviously everyone says that neurodiversity like runs in families. It 100% comes from my dad.
I think so.
But would never know because obviously he'd never go and get assessed. I mean, my dad...
He was a very sensitive child from all accounts. I mean, the girl next door used to come round and play with him and slap his face and he never used to tell his mother apparently until about the
fifth
that
five. Sounds like he was a sub, but that's a whole nother fucking thing. My dad would literally do anything to not go to the doctor. So him getting an ADHD diagnosis...
Oh, yeah, no.
He put himself to bed once when he was basically having a heart attack.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, he was like, I was going to lie down. Basically went upstairs to die.
I think that's...
And didn't say... Yeah.
No, he doesn't go to the doctor, no.
Okay. First thoughts on Brad and current thoughts. I mean, we know how we just get a bucket because we know how you feel about Brad. But go on, first thoughts on Brad and how you...
Yeah, I liked Brad from very early days. I think he's lovely, very calm and kind and has a great laugh. I really like him, yeah.
See where your face lights up when you talk about him.
And I think he's very good for you because you the last thing you need is somebody that's got a bad temper or doesn't listen to you or doesn't talk to you. And I think you're a very good match. You complement each other very well, I think.
What did you think of me having plastic surgery?
What do you mean?
What did you think of me having plastic surgery?
You haven't done anything to your face, have you?
No,
like you mean just, the boobs?
The boobs, like the injectables. I mean, you were like...
Well, of course, I tried to talk you out of having the first breast augmentation and because, I think you were 20 at the time and I didn't like the surgeon and he was determined he was going to give you these oversized balloons. And, and then you have to have them all redone years later. So I was never happy about that, but... I understand why you did it, but I think if you'd have just waited into your mid-20s, your body changes even then. And, you might not need to have...
But you admit now that I had the lip of a paper cut before. I needed top lip filler.
Yeah, I think you've just about got it right now. I think, have you had a bit more done recently?
No, it's my lip liner.
Yeah, okay. I think there was, the time the lips were just horrific.
I have to admit now, can admit now, go back to like 2020, I look like I'm smuggling frankfurters.
Well, your lips entered the room before you did,
They started out by my ears.
They were terrible.
They were like, they it were was
shocking.
Like a dinghy.
Yeah, they were shocking.
I just genuinely thought you were jealous of me.
No.
Which I've probably much thought my whole life.
But no, I think at the moment you just don't need to do anything else.
But we'll go for the lower facelift together when I'm 40 and you'll be...
God knows how old,
90? I'm going to dive into my box of wrong now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
My box of wrong, here's a little chest.
Oh, yeah.
No expense.
Cute.
No expense was spared. So you're just going to give your, like, honest... So you either say it's wrong, it's right, or it's so wrong that it's right.
Yeah.
Lying about your age.
Oh, it's definitely right.
Do you think?
Yeah. Never give people your age. They just judge you. If you tell them how old you are, they put you in a box straight away. Yeah, lie about your age, depending on the circumstance that you're in.
When do you think I should start?
Oh, you don't need to.
Couple of years?
No.
Facetune, which is face-apping pictures. You know, like smoothing stuff on pictures.
I think it's okay as long as you don't take it too far. A little bit of tweaking is fine.
A little bit of tweaking.
Yeah, okay. But in your position, because you have to be careful that you're not setting a precedent for young girls to live up to an unattainable face.
Well, I had a model for a mother, so I just had that to look at home.
Yeah, but we've all got imperfections and maybe we should just embrace that.
Returning clothes you've already worn?
Absolutely not.
No,
totally disgusting. No.
Wrong?
Never done it. Wrong.
It's because you're rich. Pretending you've cooked food, but it's actually store-bought.
I'm not a very good cook. I cook healthy.
You are a good cook. Are you joking?
Not really. I cook good
Brad
food.
Brad thinks you're the best cook he's ever had.
Really?
Like, ever. Yeah,
I'm a good roast dinner cook, but I'm not an inventive cook. So I don't lie about it though. If I bought a cake from a shop, it's come from a shop. No, I don't lie.
But
about
you just
it.
Tell the truth. So just tell the truth.
Just tell the truth.
It's a bit embarrassing, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't lie. I'd feel really uncomfortable lying, putting something on the table and saying I'd baked it. No, I couldn't do it. Because I can't tell lies. I just literally cannot lie because I would just burn up inside and I'd no.
You've just told one right there.
Why?
But you can't tell.
Shut up, you.
Exaggerating a story to make it more dramatic. Well, this you do.
We tend to do this in our family a lot, don't we? Yeah. I think that's good. But yeah.
You are quite dramatic in nature.
Yeah.
I could call you if I go, I've just got off the flight from from LA, I've had a headache for 2 days, she'd be like, brain hemorrhage. Like, you would just you just go to like very like extreme very quickly. And she used to tell us horror stories when we were kids. Like, she's go, if you hang upside down, that monkey bars, right, you're going to fall off, you're going to break your neck, you'll be in a wheelchair, you're wearing a nappy to your prom. That's like literally. Just to stop us from doing this.
Because you were the most impulsive child and teenager. And, you know,
we had scaffolding on our house. Oh. And I once climbed up the scaffolding like a monkey, not like on the outside of it. Mum's in the shower and she just saw my face. And then I just disappeared because I just slipped and I cut my arm open from like there to there.
Very impulsive.
Something deeply wrong with me. Stealing your daughter's Chanel handbag when you help her move house. It's oddly specific.
Oh, you mean the one I put between the cereal boxes?
Right, my mum helped me move in a time of need, moving house, post-breakup, everything. And she put one of my Chanel handbags in her own house. She put it in between the cereal boxes and basically stole it from me. How did I find out? I can't remember.
I opened the cupboard to help give Brad some breakfast and you went, that's my fucking handbag in there. But you've had it back and I just kept it in storage for you. I didn't even use it.
Okay, tips on being a confident, assertive woman and not caring what people think. You are very confident. You've always been very confident. You always tried to insert confidence into us as girls.
Yeah.
You know, like you'd always be like, when a waiter came, you'd be like, order your own food. Or like, if I'd ask, like, I want to ask a question. You better go and ask a question, I used to resist against. But you did always try to push us. And you always used to say, who cares what people think? Who, like, when I used to be really upset and cry and you used to be like, who cares what they think?
Yeah. No, I always told you and Georgia, because, you know, misogyny is still around, you know, and it wasn't worse then. You can be anything you want to be. Mm. Doesn't matter. You just go out there, do what you want to do, be yourself. And yeah, don't worry about what anybody else thinks about you. If that's what you want to do, then just do it. It's, you know, and just go through life. I've always taught you to be, you know, well-mannered, kind to other people. You don't have to have success on the back of other people. You just, you be a decent person. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, there's not the way we are at the moment, the way society is at the moment, we seem to be losing sight of that, I think. I feel we're a bit more divisive and a bit, things are not balanced at the moment, but maybe things will improve.
What would your tips be for not caring what other people think of you?
Just don't think about it. It's a waste of energy, isn't it?
Can we get that on a T-shirt? Just don't think about it.
Just don't think about it. What's the point? It's negative energy. Just don't think about it. Just put it to the back of your mind and forget it. It's not important.
Greggs.
Oh, my God. What about Greggs?
Wrong or right?
Wrong. I've never even been inside a Greggs. In fact, I wouldn't even walk on the same pavement outside of Greggs. I would cross the road. Now, look, I know people have to go to Greggs, but actually you don't, because all the rubbish they sell in there, you could just go to Sainsbury's and buy a piece of cheese and some nice wholemeal crackers and a couple of apples.
Almond mum.
Instead of going in and buying a great big slab of I just thought I did
put that in there because I know that is a trigger word for you.
Oh, no, it's horrible.
My mum's always been very big on healthy eating, haven't you?
Yeah.
That's probably another reason you look young. You don't eat junk.
Don't eat junk. No.
She's great fun to have at party, honestly.
I mean,
doesn't eat junk, doesn't smoke, doesn't drink. You do have a drink now, though, but for years you didn't drink.
No. Champagne or gin?
Oh, I promised you champagne today.
You do?
Fuck.
Yeah.
Well, we're done now.
Okay.
How's this experience been for you in my new studio?
Yeah.
The white settees?
It was fun. Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's not my world, is it? But
well, you're in it, sweetheart.
I know.
It's kind of your world. Did you enjoy it?
Yes, it was lovely talking to you, Olivia. And I hope we meet again in 6 months' time. Or maybe next Christmas. If you can fit us into your schedule.
Those Hermes scarves don't come cheap, you know, love. I've got to go out and earn the bacon.
This week's episode of So Wrong It's Right was brought to you by Foxy Bingo. Put some fox in your day with new, quick and interactive bingo experiences all at the tip of your finger. They have a huge range of free, classic and exclusive games you can play with your mates to keep the party going. Want to connect with other players? Foxy Bingo has a community chat so you can always feel part of the Foxy pack. So get your fox on by heading to Foxy Bingo today. 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.